This is Art/Geek with Russ Olson
and Chris Bailey,
your guide to the interesting things that happen at the intersection of art and technology.
And the paranormal.
And the paranormal. This is episode 24 for Sunday, November 1st, 2009. This week it's all about patents and trademarks and copyrights, and also Starbucks instant coffee. This week, Chris, I guess we're going to make a few changes. We're going for a new format.
We're switching over to MP3.
We've already done that.
Okay.
Yeah. What we're doing is we're going to try to break up the show a little bit. Up to now, all of our shows have pretty much been one long conversation, and that's worked for us, I think. But starting with this episode, we're going to try and break things up, and we're going to have one main topic and then a little mini topic to kind of end things with a bang, I guess.
Yeah, mix things up a little.
Right.
Keep your angry cards and letters coming.
The other change that we want to make is and more less of a change and more of an improvement, is we never really decided on a license for this podcast. Is it just copyright us and you're only allowed to listen to it sometimes between the hours of 2 and 4 in the morning on Wednesdays? Or can you do anything with it, including make fun of us? I suppose that's inevitable. So what we've decided on is some kind of Creative Commons license, and you've been looking at that. And the whole question of Creative Commons has brought up questions of what exactly copyright and trademarks and patents are all about. And so we thought that we could do a two-parter. Starting this week, we're going to just generally talk about what copyrights and patents and trademarks are, because they're all related, but they're not the same thing. And then next week, you're going to tell us all about Creative Commons, which is an approach to dealing with copyright law in the modern era of MP3s and the internet and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound like a plan?
Yes.
And mostly this is going to be focused on the United States, because that's where we live and that's what I know about. I don't know. It's just what we did.
And everyone else might not be honoring our copyrights anyway.
Right. I think there are similar copyright issues, although the laws are a little different. And when you go to different places in Europe, I know the copyright laws are a little different. But I think generally you have the same issues wherever you go in kind of the modern world, that all the copyright laws are more or less the same. And then you have these issues because the technology has gone from the printing press to the internet,
mm-hmm.
and from the record player to MP3 players and that kind of thing. Anyway, in the United States, copyright law and patent law is actually written into our Constitution. There's a section of the Constitution, and I wrote it down here, and hopefully I can read my own handwriting. But here's what the Constitution has to say. It says that Congress has the power to promote the progress of science and useful arts by securing for a limited time to authors and inventors the exclusive rights to their respective writing and discoveries. That's what the Constitution says.
Wow.
That it's actually an interesting clause to the U.S. Constitution, because it's the only grant of power to the Congress where it says why they're doing it. In other words, Congress has this power because of X. Pretty much everything else that Congress is allowed to do, like, for instance, regulate the commerce between states, the Constitution simply says Congress can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the only place where it says, in order to achieve this goal of promoting the progress of science and useful arts, Congress is allowed to do patents and copyrights. And they're not the same thing. The sources that I read said that the way legal scholars look at this, they look at it as Congress has two separate powers, one to grant copyrights and one to grant patents. So let's talk about what a patent and what a copyright is. A patent is, of course, you think of some guy inventing something in his basement and getting a patent for it. And that's pretty accurate. A patent is for an invention of some kind or other, some new technology, essentially, that you might come up with. And it is a trade. And the trade goes like this. If you get a patent, the government is granting you for 20 years, it looks like, for 20 years the right to exclude others from using this invention. So I invent something and I get a patent for it. And for 20 years, I have the right to exclude anybody else who I don't want to use, basically who doesn't pay me money, from using this invention. And that's what I get. What the society as a whole gets in return is after that 20 years, the patent is expired and anybody can use it. And since as part of the patent, as part of the patent application process, I have to disclose everything about the invention, at the end of 20 years, everybody knows how to do it. So it's the idea is we have a patent system so that inventors will not try to keep their inventions secret so that they can profit from them. We'll say, you publicize the invention and you don't have to keep it secret because we'll help you profit from it. But then at the end of 20 years, it's not secret and it's not yours anymore. And the 20 years is from the date that you apply for the patent. So it takes a while to get a patent. So effectively, it's not really 20 years if you think about it. And it costs, I looked up on the website and there's lots of fees and things, but the basic cost for applying for a patent in the United States is between $165 and $330. So it's not that huge, although I think realistically, if you're applying for a patent, you need a lawyer. And,
right.
And the lawyer is likely to charge a little bit more than $300.
In fact, in dealing with the Patent Trademark Office, you might even be, I'm pretty sure, don't they assign you an attorney?
I think they assign you an examiner. I think you're
an examiner.
It's up to you to get an attorney. I think it's like you have a lawyer because your lawyer's job is to help you get the patent.
Right.
And the examiner's job is to keep you from getting the patent, you know.
But I think at least some of the examiners are patent attorneys.
Oh, I would bet they are.
Yeah, because they need to be familiar with that side of the law and the ins and out of that. So you need one to represent your interests.
Yes, because it's not easy to get a patent, or at least in theory it shouldn't be. I know that people have been upset in the United States in recent years because there's lots of people in the United States who sort of feel that the patent office has been granting patents for things, inventions that are either obvious or have things that have been around for a very long time and so therefore shouldn't really be patented. One of the things about patents that you need to keep in mind is you have to apply for a patent. There's no automatic patents. And that'll be
like fair use.
Yeah. So if you don't patent it, you don't have a patent. It doesn't matter if you invented it or not, which is in contrast to copyrights, which are the other things that Congress has allowed to grant. And a copyright is a protection for an author of an original work, like a book or a song or a story or a poem or a computer program or a movie or a play or anything like that, some original work. And copyrights you don't really have to apply for. When you create, say you write a song, Chris, you've written that song and it's your original song, you automatically own the copyright on that song. You don't have to lift a finger and you own the copyright on that song. Now, you can register your copyright. You can take it to the copyright office and basically register it. And what that does is that gives you more power if somebody or an advantage if somebody actually does copy your music. Say somebody makes a best-selling record with your music and isn't giving you anything. If you've registered your copyright, then you have a stronger case because there's sort of a presumption that if it's copyrighted and registered, that everybody should know about it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not very secret. So it makes it improves your legal position if you register it, but it's not as if you don't own the copyright. If you don't register it, you do.
Right. Well, and even if you're registered and your music is famous, you still might have issues.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, depending on who it is who contests it
whether it really is original, I mean, is a question too. But the nice thing about copyrights is that you get them immediately. You know, they're just sort of automatic. But copyrights are a much weaker form of protection than a patent is.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes, because a copyright is basically on the work. So if I write a story about a brilliant detective who has a sidekick who's more like an ordinary guy, say like Sherlock Holmes, mm-hmm. I can do that. And if somebody else wants to write a similar story about a similar kind of detective, as long as it's not a literal copy, as long as it's not obvious that he's just taking reams and reams of stuff from my work, he can do that. Mm-hmm. As the name suggests, it's a right involving copying and not sort of intellectual borrowing or that kind of thing. So there's no way that anybody can get a copyright on country and Western songs mm-hmm. or even a particular style of country and Western song. All they can get a copyright on is their song.
Thank heavens.
Yes. We don't want to encourage that sort of thing. You can't copyright a title, so which is why there's so many books that have the same title. They just can't do it. You can copyright the work, but not the idea. So if I copyright, you know, some book about how to do something, I can prevent people from making Xerox copies of the book.
Now, can you trademark a book title?
We'll get to trademarks. Okay. Hang on just a second.
I'm jumping back and forth.
Yep, that's a great question, though. Finally, in the United States, copyrights last. There's various conditions depending on when you copyright the thing and whatnot. But in general, if you're a known author of a work, so it's not an anonymous work, you know, it's the ultimate country and Western song by Chris Bailey, the copyright currently in the United States lasts for your lifetime plus 70 years. So whenever you die, 70 years after that, the copyright runs mm-hmm. out. Now, it's been an issue in the United States because the U.S. Congress keeps extending the period of the copyright. We euphemistically call it the Mickey Mouse Law because it's one of the big forces behind extending the copyright laws, Disney, and they don't want Mickey Mouse to go out of, mm-hmm. of copyright. But at the moment, it's the life of the author plus 70 years.
But a patent is only 20 years.
Patent's only 20 years. But it's keep in mind, a patent's a stronger thing, but it's only 20 years. A copyright is a weaker thing, but it lasts longer. And as I said, registration gives you a stronger case if somebody infringes your copyright, but it's not 100% necessary. Now, you asked about trademarks, mm-hmm. which is our last thing. And somehow trademarks, you know, they're not written into the Constitution, but I think they're either covered by I think they're sort of the gray area between the patent and the copyright. Basically, a trademark is a name, symbol, or device, where I think device is more like a little symbol-y thing or something like that, not mm-hmm. like a working gadget, to indicate the source of goods or services to distinguish them from the goods or services of others. And the idea behind trademarks is just to prevent confusion, so that if I make something and I'm identifying myself as the Russellson Cookie Factory, I don't want other people just slightly misspelling my name or even claiming that they're the Russellson Cookie Factory, because that's bad for the consumers, because mm-hmm. it's better for consumers to be able to know where the cookies are coming
right.
from. And the classic example of that, the classic example of the perfect storm of trademarks, is once upon a time in the 60s, there was a semi-popular musical group. Have you ever heard of the Beatles?
I know where you're going.
The Beatles formed a company to publish their music called Apple, mm-hmm. right? A little bit later on, maybe 10 years later, a little computer company formed called Apple. And I think at some point the Apple Music people got concerned that this was a trademark infringement, because there's two companies called Apple. But one of the things that you have in trademark law is this idea that you can have two companies called Apple as long as they're doing different things and nobody's confused. Mm-hmm. The key thing with trademarks is nobody should be confused. So
when will those two things ever overlap?
Right. Yeah. What could computers possibly have to do with music?
Right.
Well, you can see what happened from there, and there's been problems ever since. Trademarks are like copyrights. There's no registration required. If you start using a name and it's a unique name, you can use it, and there's kind of a legal thing that slowly accumulates. It's almost like common law marriage, mm-hmm. if you will, that, you know, I've been using this trademark for 20 years. It's my trademark. And if someone comes along and starts claiming that they are the Russell Cookie Company, well, you do have some grounds to take them to court or whatever. But you can register trademarks, And if you do, it's a lot like copyright. If you do register them, your hand gets stronger in court if somebody starts to infringe on your copyrights. And if you register it, the websites say there's a legal presumption of ownership if you register your thing. And it also gives you the ability to sue in U.S. federal court if you register it and you feel like someone's infringing on your trademark. And here's the interesting thing. Here's this actually explains something that I've wondered about for a long time, sort of off and on. You ever see, sometimes you'll see a trademark and it'll have a little tiny TM next to it. And sometimes it'll have a little R with a circle next to it. I now know. I found this out special for this podcast. If you have an unregistered trademark, one you've never bothered to register with the Trademark and Patents Office, you can use the little TM, and that simply says, I claim this as my trademark. There's an equivalent one. Trademark is for a product, and there's an equivalent thing called the service mark for a service.
I was going to ask.
Pretty much the same thing.
Okay.
But you can do that without registration. Only if you register your trademark and you get all the way through the registration process and they say, yes, now your trademark is, or service mark is registered, can you use the little R with the circle in it?
Mm.
And that says that, you know, that's like a warning. Mm-hmm. Hey, I've got the big dogs of the federal court on my side.
Right.
Don't mess with my trademark.
We can prove it.
Yeah. And, you know, I noticed something that I did that some of my former employers would be very upset about, because I used to work for Xerox. And one of the things with trademarks is that you have to defend them. That if you don't use the trademark and you let people just use the trademark word or whatever for just common everyday things, and it starts not to be identified closely with your company or product or whatever, you can lose your trademark. And earlier in this podcast, I talked about somebody making a Xerox copy, meaning a plain paper photocopy of something. And my former employers at Xerox would have been upset, because I can remember when I worked there, they were very anxious that every Xerox employee point out whenever someone said Xerox copy, no, that was actually a plain paper copy because Xerox is a registered trademark of the Xerox, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so, sorry, Xerox.
You'd think that Kleenex or Band-Aid or Xerox would be either unconcerned or actually happy to have the common usage, because it reinforces the value or perceived value of their product.
Except that if you lose the trademark, now anybody – I'm not sure if Kleenex is still a trademark in the United States, but certainly aspirin. Aspirin used to be a brand name.
I didn't know that. Wow.
And when they sort of lost the trademark, it became a common part of speech. Now anybody can slap the word aspirin on a bottle of whatever the chemical is. And there you are.
Even though now it's ibuprofen whatever the other one is.
Yeah. So Xerox really wants to be the brand Xerox and does not want other people to be able to say, buy our Xerox machines, because to them it's not a Xerox machine.
Yeah.
So that, in a nutshell, is the world of trademarks, patents, and copyrights.
Now, one quick question I have for you. Where would you go to obtain a patent or a trademark or a copyright? I mean, obviously, most people will go online, and I'm sure there are forms you can fill out
that way. Lots of this stuff was online, and in fact, that's where I did most of this research, was just going on to the trademark. It's trademark and patent office, and then the copyright office. They're two separate things, and that's where I went and got all of this information. There's lots of forms online and that kind of stuff. I think in terms of ease of getting hold of them, the copyright is the easiest thing to get, because you almost get it automatically and then registering it. And then trademarks, I have the impression, are not very difficult to get, as long as it's a, you know, kind of a unique trademark.
Sure.
But patents are at least theoretically very difficult to get, because it's a very strong, you know.
Well, and the complexity of what it is
you're
talking about a certain widget or something that...
And it has to be original.
Right.
And where a song that you write that you're going to copyright only has to be original in terms of it has to come from you.
Mm-hmm.
But a patent has to be original in terms of no one's thought of this before.
Right.
And that's a very different thing. So I think good luck to all you budding songwriters and authors and inventors. This is the world of patents and copyrights and trademarks.
We've been talking for some time about including reviews and commentary of different either designs that we like, websites, things of note, either having to do with current events or not.
Right. I guess this came, at least this particular one, came out of our show on design issues. Mm-hmm. And we got to talking about we should be looking at the world and saying, oh, that's a good designer, that's a bad designer, artistically or just practically or whatever design is. Mm-hmm. So you have a new product, I think, Chris, that you maybe sort of like, but you have a beef about the design.
Well, I think that we're talking about the innovation that just came out from Starbucks. Originally, their innovation was that they decided to make coffee taste good. Or I don't know.
Or less bad?
Yeah. I can't imagine what it must have been like, you know, from actually the coffee during the Old West was probably pretty good if you cooked it on a fire outside, in the fire pit. Maybe it tasted pretty good. Maybe you didn't care. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not being shot at. It's warm, you know, whatever. But it was probably pretty stale. I find it interesting. I read somewhere, this is one of those things that sticks in my mind, that during that time, there used to be a coffee company, the big coffee company of the day was Arbuckles.
Arbuckles? I've never heard of them.
Sounds very similar to Starbucks.
Oh, right, right.
But what Starbucks did is they took something we already had, coffee, and said, we're going to make it better, and we're going to sell it to you for three times what you pay for it now.
I think that's a low estimate. But go ahead.
Right. And what most people would have thought, I would think, looking at in the past, they would say that's impossible. I can't imagine you're going to find that many people who would go for this. But they did, and they found that not only was there an opportunity, but there was a whole new industry mm-hmm. to be made mm-hmm. and to be fought out with other companies that have started making coffee or continued making coffee, or the old companies that decided, okay, we better step up our game a little
bit. Right.
Now, a lot of times this happens. This happened in the phone world. We've talked about with the introduction of the iPhone, other phone companies or carriers had to rethink what they were offering their subscribers in order to retain them. What Starbucks did with – it's called Via. They've come up with an instant coffee.
So let me get this straight. So they've sucked you into their Starbucks stores, of which there seems to be two on every corner
yes.
these days. And they've convinced you without a shadow of a doubt that you want to hang out at Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're selling you instant coffee that you can drink at home.
Well, they're saying, listen, we know realistically you've got to leave here sometime.
And there's right? just not enough caffeine in your life.
Well, we know you're going to go right home and make some Starbucks
yeah.
at home. And it's not as good, but, you know, it's what you've got at home and you're at home. But in the meantime, you know, you've got the one in your hand. But let's say you stopped at light and you finish your coffee. What are you going to do until, you know, you get home? Well,
or the heart attack comes.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Or you drive off the road.
Yeah.
Here now is coffee. They're not even calling it instant. They're calling coffee on the go.
Okay.
They're not calling it flavor crystals or whatever. I don't even know what that would be made of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, old, let's say, Folgers used to be flavor crystals. They're calling it microgrind.
Microgrind.
Yeah, which seems plausible enough that if you grind it up enough.
Oh, I see.
You could dissolve it in
right,
water.
Right, right.
And I had heard, I'd read somewhere, I don't even know where I saw it, that it was coming out and that a lot of people were anticipating it and excited about it. And I thought, you know, if it tastes like Starbucks coffee,
mm-hmm.
I'm excited. I'm interested in trying it. So one day, a week or two ago, I was going down to one of my local spots, and sure enough, here was this Via. And so I bought a packet of 12.
Okay.
I didn't, you know, I wasn't messing around. I didn't taste test it or compare or do, you know, put on a blindfold or anything like that. I bought my iced coffee that I get,
mm-hmm.
and I bought the box as well because I was like, you know, how bad can it be? Maybe it'll be overpriced for what I want.
Right.
I don't have to buy it again. But meanwhile, I've got it.
So what does a 12-pack of portable Starbucks coffee cost?
Well, it comes out to, I think it's about $10 or 75 cents a pack.
So it's a huge price break over the usual Starbucks.
Yes. Yeah. And I haven't priced it out to compare with other like instant Taster's Choice or something like that. Right. If that's even made anymore, I don't know. But seems to me, you know, you can get a jar of that for, I don't know, $5.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that'll probably give you 25 cups or something like that. Yeah.
You know, so. As far as that goes, I mean, these are little packets. They'll give you a full, I'd say a grande, strong mix grande, and I mix it directly into the ice water. I didn't heat it or anything, and it dissolves perfectly.
And
it tastes like Starbucks, okay? So for my money, even at 75 bucks, 75 cents a pop,
it slipped.
75 bucks.
Interesting slip of the tongue.
Yeah. What they did is Starbucks, you know, they learned from Colombian drug lords, like, you know, you can't make it too strong, you can't make it small.
Right.
These people will, you know, get it and pay as much, you know, maybe even they got the process down for turning it into concentrated flavor crystals. But anyway, I'm happy with the product itself. I think it's actually... It is worth easily for me 75 cents a pop.
So let's sum up where we are so far. So you've bought this stuff. You like the taste of it. You think the price is maybe pricey for ordinary instant coffee, but you wouldn't drink ordinary instant coffee. And compared to what you are drinking, which is the regular Starbucks stuff, it's a huge price advantage on the regular Starbucks stuff. So you are just head over heels happy with this, with no exceptions.
If I have to go... camping, if I have to go to middle America or somewhere where they don't have, and there are places like this that don't have Starbucks or boutique coffee.
So you have absolutely no issues with the design and execution of this product in any way.
Okay. I give it at least, you know, 4 stars.
Okay.
I'd say.
All right.
But they come in these little packets.
I'd say they look like
I don't know, pixie sticks. Packets or something. I don't know what else I would compare.
It's about the size of a stick of gum, a little bit bigger than the size of a stick of gum. It's
a pouch.
Little plastic foil pouchy kind of thing.
Right. And of course, and you see, I've gone through, in the box of my desk, I've gone through all but 2.5 of them.
Yeah, I can also see your hand shaking, but that's a different story.
Well, So
what's the issue with the packaging?
Right off the top, I think you could fit more than 12 packets in this box.
Yeah.
So that's over.
Yeah, it is
over packaging.
The box does that it comes in does look a little over packaged.
It's tastefully designed, and maybe in the long run, you're actually saving materials over buying a new cup every
that's
day.
That's true.
Okay, so that's there's true. That. But you get this box, and like so many boxes of things, you open it up, and you're like, oh, that's all.
Yeah,
that's all there is inside.
Some settling may have occurred in shipment.
You get these little packets.
Yeah.
But the packet itself is so narrow, I would hope that they revisit this and decide to change it later. The packet is so narrow, it makes it difficult to shake the coffee out of it.
Ah.
Now, this isn't a big deal. I've gotten better at it. It does the job. You tap it, you shake it, whatever. Okay. But I wouldn't have said, you know, if the packaging people would come to me and said, you know, how do you like this? I'd say, what else do you have? Okay. And the reason is... The very first time I went to use it, I was dumping it out into my ice water, and I dropped the packet in the water. Well, with some things this might not matter, but with this, it instantly liquefied the contents into this black ooze, okay, which, you know, if in a pinch, I would drink it.
Kind of sounds like the beginning of a science fiction story.
Yeah. It looked like something a grasshopper spits out. I pulled the packet back up, not really thinking about, oh, what's going to happen next, and I dribbled this thick coffee concentrate on my desk and on my computer, on my keyboard, and it stained the aluminum immediately. Now, I could probably get it off, but I thought, had this been any other way, this could have gone on my shirt, okay, or, you know, whatever. It could be...
So what you're saying is they managed, with the packaging, they managed to steal defeat from the jaws of victory.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah, it was. I'm not crazy about the package. Now, like I said, I have gotten used to it. I don't know what I would prefer. I don't think you could use a tea bag shape package. But maybe something a little more like that, square shaped, little wider at the top,
right,
and not as as tall.
So you like the product, you like the price, you hate the packaging.
Yes,
and that is what's it called again? Starbucks
Via,
and for a 12 pack, it is $10.
Yeah,
all right, so that's Starbucks Via.
Art/Geek is produced by Russ Olson and Chris Bailey. Leave a comment, read the show notes, or get more episodes, visit www.art/geek.com. Our intro music today was My Friend by Jason Dale. Our bumper and closing music was Forever, also by Jason Dale. Thanks for listening.